Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and this is Owen Cotter of SciFiction.com, and in this show, I'll be talking with Dead Drift producer Ken Carlson and writer Chris Nacy. Sit tight while they join us here shortly. Chris, Ken,
hello?
You there? Hello,
this is Chris.
Yeah,
here.
I'm here. This is Ken.
Hey, guys, how you doing today?
Doing well. How are you doing today, man?
Pretty good. Pretty good. Doing some good stuff, man. I just was got everybody on the horn here, right?
Yeah, I think it's just the two of us.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Well, let's get started, everybody. First off, for the listeners, can you guys both introduce yourselves and tell us a little about your project that you guys got on the interwebs?
Absolutely. I'm Ken, co-creator, writer, producer, even actor of Dead Drift. It's just kind of a campy science fiction web serial that's really lighthearted fun, doesn't take itself too seriously, but tries to delve a little bit into some kind of cool, serious science fiction subject matter.
Mm-hmm. Very cool, very cool. And now Chris, you're one of the writers on this show. What kind of stuff do you bring to the table, like in the writing? I know you also act in the show as well.
Yeah, so most of the stuff I just help brainstorm or help edit. I didn't actually come up with the story. The story was pretty much Matt and Ken. Matty and Ken came up with the whole concept initially, and then I was, you know, lucky enough to be involved in their rewriting and editing and all of that. And Ken and I have done comedy for over a decade now, writing together,
oh, wow,
collaborating, and just making people laugh.
Very cool. Very, very cool. And now you guys said a decade, so you guys like was mostly like movies and film or like on a stand up, or can you explain a little bit more about that, or
you wanna go, Ken?
No, go for it, Chris.
Yeah, so when I first met Ken, actually, he was doing a public access television show called Damn It, This Is Stupid, and it was hilarious.
Right.
Incredibly, incredibly low budget. And over time, we started collaborating together on that, and he brought me in there, and we made all sorts of humor, and we tried to meet the gamut of everything from dick and fart jokes up to political commentary. And it's odd because I recently went back and watched some of it, and even being close to a decade old, it's still relevant today, amazingly. And it's good stuff.
Well, how did you guys come up exactly with the concept for your series? And it's kind of like, I remember in the description on the site, it's something like Red Dwarf meets something. Was like the overall story based around any particular favorite sci-fi shows you guys like, or just how did y'all come up with the overall arcing idea for your concept for your series?
Maddie had come up with the idea of a short skit that was just a space captain whose ship was damaged and out of control. He had no communications. And it was a chronicle of his descent into madness as he ran out of cookies. And we shot it, and we liked it. It was a lot of fun. So we decided we'd kind of turn it into a series. And Maddie just kind of played this character that he created that is very much kind of a Rimmer archetype of character. He's really uptight, you know, by the book. And then Morris is this kind of slob who doesn't know what he's doing. So that's where the Red Dwarf angle comes in, is that these two characters are very analogous to Rimmer and Lister from Red Dwarf. They're very much an odd couple, a duo.
Right.
And as far as the overall story, I mean, it was just kind of like, let's write an adventure where these guys, you know, travel out into, let's say, Titan, which orbits Saturn, because I'm particularly fascinated by Saturn's moons, specifically Titan and Enceladus. And kind of one of the big gags in episode 10, which just aired, and it's kind of a theme for the whole series, came from Kurt Vonnegut's Sirens of Titan.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's awesome. And I noticed in the series, speaking of sci-fi references, like your actual ships, I believe the J.F. Sebastian from Blade Runner, and there's also other sci-fi references throughout the show. Are any other thing, like you have a lot of sci-fi references. What's some of the series that, like, you, obviously Blade Runner influenced you, if I'm not correct, and is there any other stuff that kind of influenced you in the pre-existing sci-fi world that brings to the show, like when you created, when your creative process?
Absolutely. There's, So all of this different science fiction, whether it's, you know, novels, comics, movies, you know, radio serials, that's all kind of influenced this language. And that's the language that we use to write the show. And yeah, obviously, you know, Blade Runner is a tremendous influence. Ridley Scott's early work, you know, Alien as well is fantastic.
Right.
A lot of that stuff just, you know, laid the groundwork and created this format. And we're just kind of like, let's take all of this stuff that's come before and let's just make a playground out of it and pay some respect to it at the same time as we
right.
have fun with it. So
right.
the science fiction and pop culture references in the show are just almost constant. It's pretty fun.
Yeah, it's a cool show, man. I'll just let you guys notice there's a lot of references. Any words on you want to add to that, Chris?
Yeah, the references are really thick, and I love it because there's kind of something for everyone. There's primarily science fiction, you know, like you mentioned the Roy Bat or the GF Sebastian, but there's also the Roy Batty from Blade Runner.
Right.
But there's also like Monty Python in there, you know, and if not direct references, they're like, you know, Rimmer and Lister type characters, which Ken alluded to there. They're actually more like the Odd Couple archetype, just set in science fiction. So it's easy to relate to Rimmer and Lister,
right.
But it's really fun. There seems to be like something for everyone. I've watched this with other people from different backgrounds, different levels of science fiction and comic book and fantasy knowledge, and they all find something else to laugh at, and I think that's really great.
Yeah, that's a genius series. I was looking at it. You guys have literally built a spaceship for use in the series, and I was curious, how long did it take you guys to build the ship, and like what stuff went into the construction process of like getting the look? I know you have also external exterior practical effect models, and it looks like you also have some CGI, which we'll talk about here in a second.
Yeah, absolutely. So for the ship models for the exterior, where we see them floating in space, a friend of mine in Olympia, Danzio, is kind of a tinkerer artist, and he just builds spaceships for fun. And I had seen some of his work, and I asked him, I said, hey, can you build me a couple spaceships? And he did, and they're amazing looking. He builds them out of just household debris, so old VCR parts, just little bits of junk that you would find in a junk drawer. And he just kind of, I think he comes up with a bit of a plan and then he just starts cobbling things together and it changes and evolves as it grows. But the end result you can see in the show and it's remarkable.
Right. Yeah,
and as for sets, one of the things we wanted to try and do was as little green screen compositing as possible because it ends up being pretty time consuming and it doesn't quite ever have, I mean, at our budget level, ever have the same look as a practical set that's lit and someone can move around in. So,
right.
You know, we decided early on we wanted to build some physical sets with 2x4s and plywood and screws and miscellaneous industrial junk and really happy with the way all the sets turned out.
Yeah, they look really good. I noticed they've got all kind of gadgets and switchboards and stuff. And we're used to the CGI elements. I know one of the characters is actually a holographic interface in the computer. Who's it responsible for all the CGI, including the holographic like stuff, designs of the like the holograms and all that? And second question: what kind of stuff might we look forward to in the future? Like any other cool special effects or any cool stuff you got in store for us?
Yeah, so I've done all the editing and all the post-production work, so all the visual effects and everything I've put together. And that's coming from a background of knowing absolutely nothing about that stuff a couple of years ago and just kind of teaching myself on the fly to make it work for our purposes. And Hannah's, I think, my favorite character in the whole show.
She's hilarious.
Yeah, I love that character. She kind of, I think, grounds everything down to – you know, the level of someone who's not in outer space, as it were.
Right. Well,
and,
Chris,
yeah, there's definitely...
Too, man.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, go ahead.
So we've got a few more big visual effects pieces coming up in the next few episodes. I think the first of those is going to be unveiled next week. And it's pretty cool. I'm happy with it. It's not... you know, it's not a professional Hollywood level look to it, but I think it's definitely paying homage to our roots. And so I think that people who like the show will definitely appreciate it.
Right. Now, you and Chris have done close to almost a dozen episodes of this series. I'm just questions for Chris. You can feel free to add what you need to with it, Ken. So, Chris, your character of Schneider is pretty hilarious, by the way. I mean, I can't even, like, stop laughing when I watch it. When I was looking at the character, I noticed that he's kind of got like a back history, like he lost his wife and all this stuff. Like, what kind of stuff might we like see in upcoming episodes that kind of relate to that lore and his future? Like, I know he's pursuing the J.F. Sebastian to find the engineers, played by you, Matt. What kind of stuff should we see in that arc there in the show?
Schneider's character has a lot of development. He starts out almost just comic relief, in my opinion. But then we hear about his backstory with his wife and his daughters, and we will delve more into that. We will learn more about exactly how his daughters came to be. We'll learn more about what happened at Horse Lover Colony, and we'll add a little bit. He'll gain a little bit of humanity towards the end.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, we talked about the CGI, we talked about the sets. You've got some interesting music for the show. First question, both you guys can like chime in on this. In each sequence, when you go to spaceship, it used to have this thing. Who's responsible for putting the musical elements together, and how did you go about picking that certain style of music to go throughout the show in general?
It's free.
So there's definitely that's a huge part of it, is that it was free. The two groups who agreed to let us use their music for the show are Broken Kites and Oops. And Oops is some guys we know here in our town, Olympia, Washington, the Olympia Organ Preservation Society. And it's just a crew of five to eight guys who get together and have jam sessions on old electronic organs. And said, we're free to use their stuff. And Broken Kites, he said that we're free to use his stuff. And I like all of it because, obviously with the Blade Runner influence, I wanted kind of a synthy, kind of 1980s feel to the music, a little throwback to some of that sci-fi of my youth. And I think it fits the show perfectly, both Broken Kites and Oops.
Very, very, really does. Really does.
And I'm tremendously grateful to those guys for letting us use it.
Oh, yeah. Well, speaking of those guys, do they have a website you'd like to shout out real quick while we're talking about, like, the music in general?
Yeah, Broken Kites. I think you can check out at Broken Kites. It's either .com or .org. Let me double check it real quick.
Broken Kite. Okay.
Yeah. BrokenKites.com. And then I think you can listen to Oop at SoundCloud.com/oops.
Okay, cool.
Or if you search SoundCloud for Oops, you should be able to find them.
Oops. Okay, cool. Well, you guys had mentioned going back to the old days of science fiction that kind of inspired your show Dead Drift. This question I was kind of just thinking at the top of my head. I know a lot of science fiction these days is kind of like the post-apocalyptic or dystopic, and your guys' show is kind of like humor and comedy. Being a science fiction producer and you as well, Chris, as a writer, and both you guys' own words, you guys can take at this question. What would you guys like to see in your own words for the future of sci-fi as a genre, going on forward from this point on?
Personally,
I want to see more optimistic science fiction. Like you said, there's a huge amount of dystopian futures and post-apocalyptic stuff, which I love. I love George Miller's Mad Max movies. They're phenomenal.
Okay.
I love the Fallout game franchise. Dystopian stuff like Logan's Run, that stuff's always fascinating to see, to see what humanity does under the yoke of oppression. I love that stuff. It's fascinating. There's just so much of it. I want to see some optimistic science fiction.
Go ahead.
I also feel like a lot of that stuff was great when it was new to me and when it was a warning of what could come. And now it's just become entertainment. And if it's just going to be entertainment, it kind of loses its value to me. So things more positive, we live in the future. If you look at Gene Roddenberry's, predictions, we have it so much. I got a tricorder I'm talking to you on right now, I can measure all sorts of things. It's got sensors and cameras and access to just networks of information all over the world, you know? And it's just, it's amazing. And I want to see maybe that spotlighted and showcased, and maybe some more predictions like Gene Roddenberry's that say, hey, you know, the future has potential, you know?
Right.
Right. Everything's not dark.
I agree with the. Right. Yeah. Well, those are some good answers, man. I don't know if I can answer that good myself. Wow, that was good.
That's one of the greatest things about Star Trek, right? Is that it was a look at the future where humanity is united at peace, exploring the galaxy and getting in adventures. And, you know, the threats were rarely human and where they came from. It was always an external threat. And, I mean, that's what I'd like to see, is more optimistic, you know, let's go to the future. Humans, we're cool. We finally, you know, we got our stuff figured out. We're together. And, you know, I want to see more of that, I guess.
Yeah, it's pretty cool stuff because, you know, like I was talking to some people, an actor, several actors I've talked about, and they, you know, one of them was, he was mentioning, like, you know, The Walking Dead. I hadn't seen much of The Walking Dead. I'm just using this as an example in several other shows. But I was like, you know, I figured, like, my question was, all right, there's zombies. They can't be interested in just the zombies because there's no real moral story. That must be the characters. And he started saying, yeah, it's the characters. So, I mean, then I was like, wow. So you got a story about, it's kind of like Battlestar Galactica. You know, got the character-driven drama of the show, but it's based around some scenario, whether it be zombies or apocalypse by Cylons or whatever. That kind of apocalyptic stuff does fascinate me, because then you see, like, what happens when the humans or whoever they unite or whatever, they work together towards a common goal, like you said. That's pretty cool,
right?
In my opinion.
Yeah.
What's that? Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I want to hear what you had to say on that. Let's see what you got.
Oh, okay. So, I mean, science fiction, in essence, I think, for me at least, for the longest time, has been about, you know, taking a group of humans and putting them in some absurd or ridiculous futuristic science technology-oriented conditions. Let's take a group of people and let's put them in a situation that we're completely unfamiliar with. Let's put them under a microscope. Let's put pressure on them. Let's see how they react, you know. Let's see what humans do if we had flying cars, or, you know, in the case of the Back to the Future, let's see what this kid does when he travels back to 1955 and meets his parents. You know, it's really definitely rooted in the characters, but we want to see how we're going to act when all these things are different, you know?
Right. Yeah, it's pretty interesting stuff to think of. And you have any words on that, Chris, you'd like to say too?
No, I'm right on the same page with Ken there. We're right on the same page.
Nice. Right. Well, you guys got Dead Drift, and I was looking. I know you guys have a YouTube channel. I know Ken does. I guess you guys work together on those things. Are there any other upcoming projects, or maybe even any other sci-fi stuff you got brewing in the background and pertaining to also Dead Drift as well? Any other new stuff you guys have on the, if you like, the upcoming projects you like to talk about?
So we've got, I think, 5 more episodes of Dead Drift that are due out. Once we hit episode 16, that's it. Dead Drift is done.
Okay.
We're definitely keeping open the possibility of doing more Dead Drift sometime down the road. That's really going to vary depending on how much, you know, how many people out there really like it and would like to see more of it. But other than that, we've definitely got a few projects kind of simmering on the burners right now. And it's just a matter of trying to figure out which ones we're going to go after next in the short term and the long term.
Anything you'd like to say on that too as well, Chris?
I'm really pushing for another season of Dead Drift that's a Through the Looking Glass season.
Oh, cool. Okay.
That's been one of my most exciting ideas so far, is doing a Through the Looking Glass with Dead Drift.
So we thought about having evil Through the Looking Glass Dead Drift universe where Morris and Banks get back to Earth and encounter evil Morris and evil Banks. And, of course, evil Banks is played by Tom Cruise.
Nice.
And evil Morris is played by Matt Damon. And evil Morris and evil Banks are not actually evil. They're really good. They're like paragons of humanity. But our Banks and Morris think they're evil, so they keep referring to them as evil Banks and evil Morris.
Straight. Wow, that's hilarious. Wow, that's funny. Well,
but you know, getting Tom Cruise and Matt Damon probably not going to happen.
Oh, yeah. I don't know about that. He's probably Tom Cruise is always doing something, and Matt Damon as well.
Yeah.
What, right quick, we guys got a little bit of time. You guys have mentioned your buddy's site, the music site. Do you guys yourselves have any like website links, Twitters or Facebooks you'd like to give out for the fans to find out more about like Dead Drift and your various other projects and so forth?
Yeah, absolutely. You can watch and learn a lot of stuff about Dead Drift at deaddriftshow.com. We've got galleries of behind-the-scenes construction process of all the sets. All the videos are up there. There's a bunch of behind-the-scenes videos and some of the press that we've had done as well. So there's a lot of stuff at deaddriftshow.com. And our Twitter is twitter.com/deaddriftshow. That's a good one to follow as well. We got a Facebook. It's facebook.com/deaddrifter.
Okay.
And there's a link to all that on deaddriftshow.com. And our YouTube is youtube.com/KenzoFKC. But I think deaddriftshow.com is definitely the portal where you can kind of access all that other stuff.
Deaddriftshow.com. Okay, cool. Well, Ken and Chris, you guys have a beautiful day. It was a pleasure talking with you guys. You keep up the excellent work, and I look forward to seeing more episodes of your show, man. Take care, guys.
Thank you, Owen. We're really grateful for the opportunity, man. Take care.
Oh, you're most welcome. You guys have a beautiful day. Peace.
You too. Take care.